Alright, welcome everyone back to another DJM podcast. And before we begin, we've got to address the interesting weather I've got here. So you might get a little bit of that weather and that wind feeding back into what we are saying. All we gotta do is ignore it, I guess. But last week, I actually had Kyle, one of our talent acquisition executives, join me in discussing meritocracy and what meritocracy is, and if it actually takes place within UK education and UK employment. This week, we are going to be taking it a lot more political and a lot more broader. Not to say that we're going to be taking a political stance in any way, shape, or form. Rather, we are just going to be talking about this overwhelming question that hangs over the head of diversity, so to speak. And that is diversity inherently political? Let's take some time to actually think about this. Diversity and inclusion initiatives have now become the cornerstone of how people address recruitment and staffing. What you see now more than ever is companies are implementing policies, initiatives, and recruitment strategies to ensure that when they are hiring, they are being a lot more equal than, let's say, they were even 10 years ago. And it is a bit of a contentious debate. We can't sit here and say that people are only doing it for the purposes of making sure that everybody is doing it so candidates get equal opportunities. Realistically, that is naive. Companies can also implement these kind of strategies to seem inclusive, for marketing purposes, for images, to fulfill a quota. Because realistically, these kind of things can affect your brand representation. And actually, it can affect whether candidates in general will want to apply to your firm or your company on the basis of how equal your hiring practices actually are. So some of the strategies that have been implemented have been widely discussed either on a DJM podcast or on a DJM blog. A lot of the online testings and application processes have now taken a manner of having strategy that is related to reducing recruitment bias. I will be addressing how this is a little bit more of a problematic issue when it comes to interviewing what companies have done to tackle this. But again, we are going to be talking about whether it is all egalitarian for the greater good or for equality, and to what extent is addressing diversity political or a marketing issue. So a question that I have been asked by people is, should we be discussing diversity in a political way? And if we are, is it a good thing? Can it have a positive impact, or is it more likely negative? Let's take a look at that word political. Often when people hear the word political or politics, they think about political figureheads, leaders of countries. But what you also think about when thinking about politics is conflict and debate. All the time, every time. People have different ideologies between them. Think about the political parties that are always running in elections, if you want a good example. In the UK, you've got the Lib Dems, Conservatives, the Green Party, the Labour Party, you have UKIP, and there are many, many more after that. And apart from them, you also have independent runners who are often taking part in elections as well. And what the general public have thrown at them are all of these different ideas about what these political parties or political representatives believe what is right. And if you add diversity and inclusion measures into the mix, it is no different. There are different debates about what people think are justified, what people think aren't justified, and whether using, let's say, BAME strategies or encouraging underrepresented groups to apply is either positive discrimination towards a certain group, but outright discrimination towards another. when you have affirmative action policies implemented in higher education, and in some cases even employers and recruitment agencies. Again, are you discriminating towards one group while demonstrating positive action or affirmative action towards certain underrepresented or minority groups? But then you also have the flip side. These underrepresented groups, particularly and most likely people of colour, are groups of people, especially within Eurocentric and Northern American countries, that have been wildly underrepresented and have scarce opportunities to progress in their careers at the same extent to dominant racial communities in particular, such as white individuals. But then you cannot just isolate a single factor, which is a problem. Because I like to use this term, the multi-pronged approach. You can't isolate these factors, because then what you are doing is you are creating marginalized groups everywhere. But with this multi-pronged approach, what you are going to realize is that it is incredibly complicated to address all the factors all the time. The reason why often governments isolate certain variables or factors or demographical characteristics when trying to address diversity and inclusion initiatives is because they want to attempt or try to do whatever they can. But the big question here is what they are doing effective? Are they actually making reasonable change? Are they actually severely disadvantaging other groups? Are they actually continuing to disadvantage certain groups that have been disadvantaged for a very long time? Particularly those I'm going to highlight with ability and accessibility needs. So the Equality Act of 2010 is basically legislation that was passed to protect workers against discrimination. And this is based on the characteristics of age, race, religion, sexuality, gender identity, civil or marriage partnerships, pregnancy, and disability. And this applies to hiring processes, but it also just applies to workplace discourse and demeanor. And it's very important for also addressing reasons of termination. And I want to flag this up, particularly with regards to individuals who can get pregnant or need to take extended maternity or paternity leave for whatever reason. So the politicization of these discussions occur when groups have privilege over others. I think when we get down to the crux of talking about political correctness, some people do find it offensive when saying that, right, you can't say that white people are a dominant race. And in some manners, I agree. Because you do have to take social class, you have to take dual identities, like as in dual ethnicities and dual nationalities, into account that can also affect their social positioning. But overall, white middle class individuals seem to be afforded privileges when it comes to promotions, being hired, and perks in comparison to their peers who are people of colour. And if you do want evidence to see that I am not just stating this as an opinion, if you head over to the DJM site on the blog, I will be citing research papers as examples to support what I am saying. We seem to be circling around a lot of different ideas right now about how to address the politics of diversity. And one of the big overarching questions you do have to ask yourself is whether this discussion is actually going to have positive implications on the workforce or negative. Now let's start with the negative, because there are unfortunately quite a few. The politicization of certain diversity and inclusion initiatives or even discussions can directly link to discrimination. So in what way? I want to take an example of a social researcher who discussed the fact that in the multicultural age and society that we currently live in, people from ethnic minorities or people of colour, which is a term that I would prefer, are afforded advantages for being people of colour. But when you look at the large scope of things, they are finally being given opportunities that they were not afforded in terms of having better education, whether it be public or private, most likely better value of public education. They are now also being afforded the same opportunities to get into university as more communities, especially those with people of colour, have had very low attainment rates to get into higher education and then on to getting decently paid careers or jobs that are not vocational or lower skilled. So what these programs are basically doing for these underrepresented minorities within the workforce is giving them access to the labour market. And if you're going to discriminate them by saying that they are now getting an unfair advantage to the labour market by having these initiatives in place for them, then you are stigmatising any positive actions those initiatives represent. And pointed conversations or pointed debates about diversity, saying that people are only going to be hired or people should only be hired to fill a quota, again, raises many issues about ignoring people's merit. You should always be trying to pick the candidate who is best qualified. And whether you think that you should be doing that by including all of the demographical information, or whether you think that you should be doing that by omitting them completely so they are not a factor in your choice, is something that you can consider. But a candidate's value should not be framed from a brand awareness, brand representation, marketing or communications perspective. Because then realistically, what are you doing with that new employee? You are just making them a token. So again, this is something to be mindful of. And it's inherently now more important than ever to think about these things in our political climate. Because let's talk about the context of the United Kingdom. Our social strata has dramatically changed over the turn of the millennium. Regional communities have become a lot more diverse in certain areas. And now, diversity, of course, whether it's in education, workforce, or just in general public, has become a lot more of a relevant issue. And of course, we have seen changes implemented that I've discussed previously to better accommodate diversity, but we do have certain groups still feeling isolated, either from the privilege that they once had to the ones that they feel like they do not have anymore, or you still have groups isolated because they feel like they shouldn't be utilizing the advantages that are now given to them because it is unfair and it is bias. So I want to take some time to talk about critical race theory, something that you don't talk about every day, but it really looks at race from all lenses. And one of the prime critiques using critical race theory is thinking about the dichotomy between underrepresented groups and minorities that are typically people of colour, and then what you would in social research call the white dominant majority, which is what you do have in terms of race proportions within the UK. Now, I do not want to currently add the dimension of social class because I will just talk about that in a moment. But what you get is in the talent acquisition and recruitment movement within the UK, new initiatives are being implemented to afford more benefits or more opportunities, would be a brilliant word, to people of colour. But in saying this, what you may see is one angle of critical race theory is that underrepresented minority races are being afforded certain equality initiatives that maybe white working class communities could also benefit from, but are not access to or privy to because they are white. So, looking at that from both perspectives, you often get political standpoints and political debates, whether this initiative is actually promoting inequality or promoting equality. Another angle to this was this a display of white fragility, where suddenly people of colour are finally being opportuned or finally being provided equality, and now the race that was once the most privileged is feeling left out. So people frame this in different ways, and we are not going to take a standpoint. What I am doing here is just explaining all of the different perspectives that can possibly be thought out in a situation. And the whole point of doing something like this is to just demonstrate how politically sensitive the issue of diversity really is. Now, this is not the only example that I want to talk about, though it is the only one that I have talked about thus far, but it is one of the most prevalent ones. We learn a lot about diversity from the politics of it, because politics and diversity is so concerned with race relations, power relations, and gender relations. That key word of relations is always going to be somehow inherently rooted in different mechanisms of power. So sometimes it can actually be very different and difficult to separate politics from diversity, and it can have negative implication. But at DJM, the whole point of us wanting to talk about diversity in politics is that we do not want to make it a contentious issue. In fact, sometimes the politicization of diversity can actually have very positive implications. And let's take the shifting framework of using the word BAME. So initially, the word BAME was created in about 2010 for the government to address underrepresented communities within the United Kingdom. And they are often ethnic minorities who are non-white or people of colour. Now, by doing this, they were maybe afforded some more housing, education, and employment initiatives to help better integrate them into society. And these programs have had much better attainment in helping education. But when you hit about 2015, new discourse arrived about how the word BAME is not necessarily the best way at all to address people of colour, their culture, their ethnicity, their role in society, because it is heavily relational to their relationship with their white peers. And with changing legislation to maybe now calling it ethnic minorities. So the idea is, despite politicization, and of course I recognize that there is still so much work to do, you use critical frameworks to assess how the times are changing. And politics can be a beneficial way to help people understand how they can change their strategies to make it a little bit more inclusive for the people who do not have a voice. Using the example of the shifting paradigm of BAME, you went from using it, it implemented certain universal or beneficial rather initiatives in the time that it was there, though the framing of the word BAME and what it represented became a problematic issue. It was a heavily politicized dynamic that was not suited to the people that it was addressing. So politically, it called for a change in name that was supposedly going to be very beneficial to the communities like mine that are represented by that word BAME. Now, even though they have now used the word or the phrase ethnic minorities to replace the word BAME, again, you are always going to have individuals who have an issue with it, And some individuals who may be now happy with the change because they feel like it is more affluent or more positive in representing their identity. Again, we are not going to take a standpoint on that. It is up for you to decide what your own thoughts are on this without having any influence from what we are saying. What we are trying to do here is just draw out both sides of the story, or the multiple sides of the story. So, I want to assure you that at DJM, we work hard to ensure that diversity shouldn't be a contentious subject matter for people to discuss. It can be acted and addressed openly from a range of different subject matters and perspectives. You know, you often get that phrase from teachers that no phrase is a stupid phrase or no question is a stupid question. Just ask it. We would like to kind of adopt that communication policy here, because that's the only way people will learn and take a stance on what they believe in. A critical framework in successful diversity initiatives is just listening to diverse voices. And diverse does not mean non-white, and this is something that I will be addressing in the very near future. And diverse does not mean excluding white individuals, and that is something that I will be addressing in the very near future. And also, discussing diversity just shouldn't be judgmental. Because when it gets to the point of addressing judgment on something that everyone is saying, gets to the point where, again, you will have vital voices that will be muted, that will be subject to discrimination if you do not give them that voice. So take the time to listen to different voices. Take the time to lend your voice to the discussion where you can. And of course, there is a very big difference to having a very constructive and critical discussion on diversity, but there is a border on making sure that you are not prejudicial or you are not discriminatory to anybody that you are discussing it with, because that is a completely different line of fire, which is not acceptable in any way, shape, or form. So as always, we like to make our content as accessible as possible for those who need or prefer it. And audio material, which is this, is already going to be available for you to listen to. Now, if you do need visual material or you just rather read, we will have the blog already posted and waiting for you to have a read and leave your comments and your thoughts. So everyone, it has been Noor, and I will be back next week actually talking about this issue of diversity and whiteness and getting to the crux of that power dynamic next week. I hope to see you all there. Have those diversity discussions, and I will see you next week with another episode.